Well, you may have been gardening for decades, or maybe this is your first year gardening, or maybe next year is going to be your first gardening. Glad to have you with us for another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and I don't think there's any better resource for gardening and a whole lot more, to be honest, than the horticulture educators and agriculture agents who work with the University of Wisconsin Extension. And today we're happy to have Aaron LaFave with us. Aaron is the horticulture educator for Eau Claire County, joins us from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Eau Claire. And Aaron, thanks so much for joining us on Garden Talk.
Thanks for having me.
It's always a great pleasure. And, you know, this time of the year, all right, it's pretty warm out today, at least in southern Wisconsin. I don't know what it's like in Eau Claire.
It's about in the 60s.
Yeah. So winter seems a ways off. Are there things that we should be thinking about now to sort of address winter, pre-winter in our gardens?
Yeah, for vegetable gardens and even flower gardens, I would start taking out all the dead and diseased material. I wouldn't cut anything down to the ground just yet. We usually want to wait until everything's turned yellow and is done, because things that are still green are helping to produce energy for the roots to get them through this through the winter, and we don't want to stop that process until they've really turned yellow or brown. So hold off on some of those things before you're cutting them to the ground until they're done completely being green. And then there's so many things we can do, but a lot of things we kind of want to wait until the first frost as well. And we usually see our first killing frost about the 20th of September here in northern Wisconsin. But we haven't seen, even at looking at the forecast, I haven't seen anything that's even getting close to a killing frost, maybe to the low 40s. But it looks like we might hold out until October before we even get a killing frost.
So, yeah, and boy, that's strange, but maybe that's the new reality for us here in the state.
Yeah, it seems to be kind of the new trend. Last year it was about the same, and it just seems like we get a little bit longer growing season here than we used to.
Christine sent a note on Facebook and wondered if you have any tips on cleaning up tools and maintaining tools.
Yeah, there is even a great video of this from when Shelley Ryan did an episode on this for Wisconsin Gardening. So if you want to see in visually how that's done, I would check that out. The archive is up. But you want to make sure you're putting your tools away without any soil on them. Make sure they're dry so that they don't start to rust over time. And sometimes you have to file some of this stuff off and put some different kinds of oils on them to kind of treat them through the winter. But definitely don't let them lay in your garden for the winter. Get them out into a spot that is dry, and so that everything's nice and sharp for next year. Maybe consider taking them somewhere to get them sharpened. Or like I said, watch that nice episode with Shelley Ryan, because they show how to do some sharpening of the shovels and tools, just to make sure you're ready for next year.
Yeah, it's very, very good points. And just Wisconsin Public Television, the Wisconsin gardener, Shelley Ryan, rest her soul. Mm-hmm. It's a great piece, as a matter of fact. We had a question from John in Glendale, who has an oak tree in his yard, and it's surrounded by smaller trees and bushes around the base. You can probably picture that. Will they hurt the oak tree at all?
Well, they certainly will. They're all
competing.
Yeah, they're competing for nutrients and moisture. Certainly in northern Wisconsin or in Eau Claire, we didn't have problems with moisture this year, but they will compete with each other. Certainly they can all grow together harmoniously too, but you just might want to keep an eye on nutrient levels in that area. You know, we do suggest keeping the base of a tree clear all the way to the drip line if possible, so that grass and other bushes and trees don't compete for it. And some of those things might get shaded out too, so that's something to consider. If you have a bush under there that typically gets flowers over time, you might notice less production of flowers just because the oak tree might be shading them out.
Talking today about your garden, as a matter of fact, with Aaron LaFave, horticulture educator for Eau Claire County. You may have a question. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. What's going on in your garden? How would you characterize your garden this year? Do you have a good one? 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. In your part of Wisconsin, Aaron, how was the growing season?
It was an excellent growing season, in my opinion, because of all the rain that we got. Things grew really well. Lawns were nice and green. Really, in terms of insects and disease problems, they weren't nothing really major problems. I mean, we still had them, of course, the tomato blights and whatnot, but nothing was out of control or a high amount of infestations or anything like that. So I saw some of the gardens that I take care of really flourish in ways that I haven't seen in the last couple of years.
Very, very good news. And I think we had a fairly good year in southern Wisconsin as well. At least my garden was. I think things were seemed to be a little late, especially tomatoes. A lot of people complained about not having tomatoes, like when they thought they should be having tomatoes.
Yeah, ours ripened later than normal. A lot of people sat with green tomatoes for a long time. And the one issue we had kind of early on in the season was some nutrient problems. Because of so much rain, I think it leached out some of that nitrogen really fast. So we did have to, kind of coach people in that area of maybe you need a little extra nitrogen because of so much rain. And I did see some of that in our youth gardens and at our teaching gardens, some of the yellowing on the leaves that looks like the veins are green, but everything else is kind of turning yellow. That's chlorosis. And so we just added some nitrogen, a fertilizer to help with that.
My straw bale garden looked really good, and this for the first time a squirrel discovered a couple of my bales that I had planted potatoes in and dug around in there, which was not what I had in mind for those potatoes.
We did a straw bale garden in our teaching garden. We put a teaching garden in for the first time around our office this year, and we did a straw bale garden. It really was not happy for the first part of the summer, but now it is flourishing. The cucumbers are coming really fast and furious, and the broccoli is loving it in there, too. So it was interesting to watch that whole process work out.
Yeah, I really had good luck with most of the tomatoes, and I had several different kinds of pepper plants. And both sweet and hot, and they did very, very well. And the potatoes were doing really well, too. But the squirrel got in there first. I didn't think squirrels would eat potatoes, but this one found a liking to them. Peter wonders on Facebook if you can cut down his asparagus yet.
Well, like I said, with the asparagus or most things, you want to wait until it's not green anymore. You want to wait until it's yellowing or going back because it's producing, it's doing the photosynthesis, which is creating sugars and bringing it down to those roots. And you really want to make sure it has a nice store in those roots so that it can get through the winter because we never really know how the winter is going to go. So if we have a really hard, long winter, plants need quite a bit of storage reserve and energy reserve to get through that and wait for the nice temperatures where they can come out of the ground and start making more energy.
I'd say, do you have access right there to our Facebook page?
Yes.
Take a look. Go to visitor posts over on the left-hand side of the page and click on it and take a look at the photo that Annie said. I have never seen a all-white pepper.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that something? Listen, as you listen in, you might want to go to our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. And take a look. It's over on the left side, visitor posts. And Annie has this pepper that's white. She planted Kelly Wonder bells and an heirloom mix that included purple. No bugs have touched it, and it's the only pepper on the plant. I'm tempted to save it and see what happens next year. Any ideas? Man, it looks like a variety, doesn't it? I mean, it doesn't look like a sick pepper.
Where is, I'm on the Facebook page looking at the post, but I don't see the pepper.
Did you click on visitor posts?
No, I don't see that. But
it's over on the left side.
Okay. I've never seen a white pepper. We did get some very light green, almost lime color peppers in our teaching gardens this year, and they never changed. I let them sit on there, and they never darkened or anything. So it must be a variety of some sort.
Yeah, I hope you can go to it. It's white as white paper. I mean, it's really white. It's worth a look. So go over on the left side of the page. You'll see, scrolling down a little bit, you'll see something saying visitor posts. And if you click on visitor posts, that's going to pop up. Or maybe you may need to refresh. It may have come up late. So,
and I'm looking on a cell phone too, so that's it moves things around.
That's a little harder. No wonder you're having trouble. Well, I have never seen a pepper like that one, for sure. Maria in Lake Geneva has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for your program always. I have a little bit different question.
Sure.
I was wondering if there is a special time of the year when you should have your arborvita trimmed. Those great big long tall trees. I hear spring, I hear fall, I hear summer, so I'd like to get an expert opinion.
Sure.
Well, with arborvitae, you can prune anything at any time. The best time is when things are cool and dormant because we don't have the insect and disease pressure as we would in the summer. And with arborvitae, they are growing more towards the tips of the branches.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you cut them back, you want to make sure you cut it back to a growing point rather than, let's say, some of the other bushes like a lilac bush. When you trim it all the way back, it'll just leaf out wherever you cut it back to. And if you're not careful, and if you cut back your arborvitae all the way to like a bare branch that doesn't have much growth in like towards the center where the main stem is, then it'll kind of bare for a couple of years. So just prune it back to a growing point or where you see another bud or a little branch already. And don't take more than a third of that tree at one time in terms of pruning. So you don't want to whack it down to half of what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So you definitely want to be careful with it. You want to shape it. You want to take a couple cuts and then step back and look to see. And just really be careful of where you're cutting so that you don't have an unsightly bald spot in your arborvitae because, like I said, they grow slower than most trees do.
Yep.
Or most shrubs. Mm-hmm. And arborvitaes, there's so many shapes too. So
These are more like a privacy between our house and the neighbors, and they've gotten so, so tall that when the snow comes, luckily, you know, I go out, we shake it off or take a rake and shake it off, and then they'll stand back up. I mean, I'm talking about a tree about over 25 feet tall.
Oh.
And one time when we had them trimmed, the people came and they just trimmed the tops of them off. And they did grow back after like a year or so.
Yeah.
But, and I noticed where they trim, though, they're nice and full on that top.
Yeah, but that probably looked kind of silly for a little
awful bit.
Yeah, I bet it looked awful.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. And thank you for your show. Very enjoyable.
Oh, thanks, Maria. Appreciate your call. Nancy in Milwaukee has a question as well. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I have two questions, so I hope you have time to answer them.
Sure.
I have a hydrangea in my front yard. I live in Milwaukee, and I believe we're zone 5. And last year we had no blooms on the hydrangea, and this year we had one bloom. And I'm not sure why. And the previous years we had a beautiful hydrangea with lots of flowers, and I'm not sure if it's a soil issue or what the problem is. And my second question is related to a smoke bush that we have, and I don't know the scientific name for this bush, but it's about 20 feet tall, and half of it now is still looks very, very healthy, but the other half is almost like it's changing, like with the seasons already. But I'm not sure if it's diseased or if it's just part, you know, if it's fall and just half of it happens to be changing before the other half. So those are my two questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the hydrangea, I would say, is there a tree nearby that's growing and it's shading that hydrangea a little bit more? Because sometimes that happens. We don't notice how much that's, getting bigger and shading things out. I've seen that happen.
It gets a lot of sun.
Okay.
It has a lot of sun, yep.
And have you ever pruned it?
So last year, last summer, when we didn't have any flowers, the previous fall, I did prune it down. But last fall, a year ago, I did not, hoping that, you know, I think the buds set in the fall, if I read correctly, and that if you prune the buds, then you're not going to have any flowers. So we didn't prune it at all last fall. So I did and I didn't, but still no flowers to speak of. This year, like I said, we had one beautiful pink flower.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm.
Are you supposed to prune them?
Well, I was just wondering when you had pruned it, because pruning too late or too much will remove the next year's buds.
That's what I thought I did 2 years ago. So last year I was like, I'm not touching it. I'm just not going to touch it at all. I'm going to leave it, and then I'll just remove the dead. You know, the
right.
Yeah.
In the spring.
Usually you prune them shortly after they've flowered.
Oh, okay.
You know, I'm thinking maybe that one prune was a little too hard on it, and it's taken a while to come back. And the other suggestion I would have is maybe do a new soil test in that area if you haven't for a while, and just see if there's some nutrient problem. But those are the things I'm thinking about for that.
Yeah, what about the smoke bush?
The smoke bush, usually when we see a tree being affected on one half and the other side's not, that's typically showing that there's some sign of stress on that tree. Now, the roots of that tree maybe are coming up against something underground that we can't see, or maybe the soil is a little bit different on that side of the tree than on the other one. So,
it is planted between, you know, we live in the city, so we have a house pretty close, and it's planted between our houses. Mm. So maybe it's coming up against the other house's foundation or something?
It could be. I would just look maybe on that side of the tree to see if there's any holes or any sort of sign of distress. And then, there's not much you can do about what you're seeing at this point unless you see some sort of insect or disease problem on that side of the tree. There, you could potentially send a sample to Brian Huddleston's lab and just see if there's any disease starting on that one side.
Of the actual tree, you mean?
He wants about a 12-inch branch sent in that's showing symptoms but is not dead.
Okay.
Yep.
And the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic is where you'd send it. University of Wisconsin Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. If you Google that, I think we have a link to it on our Facebook page as well.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. We have Jerry in Hayward has a question for you. Jerry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I planted two Honeycrisp apple trees 2 years ago, and the deer got one of them, and it's coming up from invasive, and I know that's not going to be a Honeycrisp, but what comes up, can I use that as a pollinator for the one that did survive?
Yes, if it does grow up as a fruit tree, then you can. If it grows up as an apple tree, I have no idea what that rootstock is going to be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's probably much smaller than the other one, so I'm not sure if they're going to bloom at the same time or if they're going to be the needed size as the other one is.
That's the other problem.
All right, I guess we just got to go get another apple tree.
if there's a crab apple tree within, you know, like, I think it's a mile, half a mile, like a wild crab apple tree or anything, that would be good enough.
Okay, maybe I'll try that then.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Jerry. Appreciate it. And you can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. I'm Larry Mehler. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week, just to let you know, next week on Garden Talk, we're going to be talking about dividing your bulbs and peonies. Plus, we'll have some information on brown marmorated stink bug. Oh my goodness me. I don't know anything about it. We'll find out next week on Garden Talk. Right now, though, we're finding out about your garden with Aaron LaFave, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Eau Claire County. Again, the number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And we've got some more photos up. We'll take a look at those and talk about them as well as we move along here. Ellen in Stoddard had a question for you, so let's go to Ellen. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you, Larry. I know you and previous guests have talked about this before, but I need a review. We recently visited our kids out in Colorado, up in the Vail Valley, and our son and his girlfriend had a garden plot, and they've got some nice green tomatoes, but they are probably not going to ripen before they have their first frost up there. And so I remembered you talking about, was it wrapping them in newspaper or just, I couldn't remember all the details of how to go about saving those green tomatoes.
Yeah, I had red tomatoes into November last year.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, what I did, Ellen and Aaron, was set them on in a kind of an open bowl in a sunny area, to be perfectly honest, and just let them go. And they sort of, I don't know if I had just the right kind of light conditions or whatever, but they sort of slowly ripened. And they weren't very good, but I was still eating them in November. And what about, Aaron, what about wrapping them up? I know people have wrapped them up in newspaper, and that's one way to do it. And some people have, if you've got one of these fruit ripening bowls, I don't know if you've ever seen those. They're fairly somewhat large, and they have a bottom and a top, of course, and the top is plastic and has some holes in it. Have you ever seen those, Aaron?
I haven't seen those, and the trick is to kind of keep them warm because, of course, cool temperatures won't allow them to ripen. But you're right, Larry, sometimes towards the end of the season, even if they're red, they don't taste very good. But, you know, they're fun to cook with, too, and I've heard of the trick of wrapping them in paper as well, and other people have other tricks, too. But you've said some things that I've thought of, too.
Yeah.
So keeping them more towards the warm temperature rather than cool is best?
Well, right. Work for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I should go online and just type in fruit ripening bowl and see if they're still. I've got one a long, long time ago, and it really is kind of nice. Although I didn't use it for the tomatoes. I've used it for other, you know, bananas or whatever, and it has worked pretty well. So I'll look that up. Vicki in Duluth, Minnesota has a question, I believe. Vicki, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. I have a toca that I got as a pollinator, and it's a really nice, healthy tree. The other one's kind of failing, a toca plum, that is.
Yep.
And anyway, it drops its fruit before, you know, when there's still like an inch across and green.
That's too bad.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Because they're so tasty.
Oh, so it's dropping its fruit before it ripens.
Yeah.
Do you ever use any, do you do any insecticide treatments or anything like that? Because sometimes plants will do that if they have some sort of insect on them doing that, as well as if they're just overly stressed, they might drop them. So have you tried anything like that?
No, I haven't done anything. And it's on a slight downhill slope, and it's in my yard, so it has grass around it. I'm not the greatest gardener. And I've done nothing other than try to keep it small.
Yeah.
Right. Are you getting any ripe fruit?
No.
Oh, okay.
Never got one. And it's a few years old now. It's a pretty good size.
Mm-hmm. But I wonder if it must be under some stress, isn't it? Wouldn't you think, Aaron, if it's...
Yeah, and the other thing, does it seem to have a lot of fruit on there?
No, not a lot.
Okay. Mm. Huh. So it's not overproducing, which could...
No.
And where are you? Duluth, Minnesota. So you had plenty of water.
Oh, this year, yeah. We had lots of nice water. And it's clear sunlight, nice sunny spot.
Well, it's a mystery. But
maybe I should just take better care of it?
Well, not necessarily. You know, the other thing, too, is, again, you could send a sample to somebody, to a clinic of some sort, just to see if there's, like, a disease problem going on in it. But,
could be a stress from, what was it like, 2 years ago up there? Was it a bad, was it dry 2 years ago up there?
I can't remember. We had a really cold, well, you did, too.
Well, yeah, that, and that, you know, sometimes it's something that happened a while back, and we can't, you know, you kind of forget what the 2 years ago winter was like or the summer was like in terms of rainfall, and it could be that a sort of a stress situation.
Okay.
Yeah it's,
so should I wait till spring to send a sample?
Unless you've got something, unless you can get your hands on a branch, what is it, 6 inches, or no, about a foot long that may look...
If you see a symptom, or if you see that it's happening on a certain side of the tree than the other, that might indicate something. But, I just don't know what else that one could be. It's on a slope, too, so I don't know if there's any nutrient problem from it, the water kind of washing away a little quicker.
It's a mystery. We have, in our neighborhood, there's a family with a pear tree, and this is... I have never seen so many pears on a single tree as this tree has. It is unbelievable. And I've grabbed a few, and yet, of course, the neighbors say, take whatever you want because it's dropping a lot. But the pears are, I would say, about two-thirds the size of, quote, normal pear when they drop. And... But they are so, so delicious. But it looks like thousands of pears. I should have taken a photo, darn it. What was I thinking? Because I've never seen a pear tree with that many pears on it. It's
and
just
Larry,
unbelievable.
I can see pictures now on the Facebook page, too. So if you have to indicate something on there, I can see that.
Oh, wonderful. So do you see the white pepper?
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that.
And it looks healthy. I mean, it doesn't look... The leaves in that look healthy, and the pepper itself, I mean, brilliant white.
Maybe she's got a new cultivar. So.
I would be saving the seeds on that one for sure. And if as you're anybody else listening, if you got an all white, go to my Facebook page, our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and take a look at that pepper. Or if you've had an all white pepper and know some, maybe you had a variety that turned out to be all white, let us know. There's also another post from a listener, I don't know if you can see it, from Brianna, who wonders what this plant is and why they're dying from the bottom up. We've had them for a number of years. This is the first year rabbits didn't eat them. It almost looks, do you see it?
Yeah, my first guess was an aster of some sort.
Yeah.
But regardless of what kind
nice
it is.
Nice purple flower.
Yeah, that dieback is just probably a little bit of a moisture-type disease under there, and like a little bit of a leaf blight that's happening. And that's pretty indicative of an aster. They do that often, or if they get too dry from the bottom or something like that, they'll kind of crisp up like that. But I wouldn't necessarily worry about that, but it just looks like an aster from what I can see in this picture.
I'm with you. I'm going along with you on that one. Speaking of potential problems in plants, Beth from Eau Claire says they have a lot of powdery mildew in the garden. Wondering if that's going to carry over into next year.
Potentially, what I would do is make sure you clear all that debris, the leaf debris, out of there. Don't let it sit over the winter, even. Just get it out of there, and dispose of it where you can, or bury it if you can. And if there's any leaf debris left with that on there, it might carry over the next year. But you also will need certain weather conditions for that to really thrive. Powdery mildew, we usually see it start when it gets humid outside, humid and dry. But I've seen a lot of powdery mildew on things this year, too. So just try to clean up the garden really well with that in there, and perhaps whatever you planted there, try to put it somewhere else, just in case there is that debris in there with the powdery mildew. You know, if it was on cucumbers or something like that, and you decide to put potatoes in that same spot next year, that powdery mildew would not transfer to the potatoes. So you could just make sure you move that variety of vegetable or fruit out of there and grow it somewhere else.
I had no powdery mildew this year in my garden, flower or vegetable. So I was a happy camper.
Yeah.
For sure. Mary and Brandon, thank you for calling. Hi. Mary, are you there? Am I doing something wrong? No, I don't think so. I wonder if we lost her. Let's try Shayna in Brandon next. Shayna, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I want to switch to a lasagna garden, no-till garden this year.
Yep.
And I am curious if I can cut down my existing, you know, dead vegetables and stuff that are in there already and start that as my first base and build my layers on top of that. Or should I clear everything out and start fresh?
Yes and no would be my answer. You could. I like your idea of putting them on the first layer and burying them, because if there is diseases on there, then they can't necessarily transfer over to the other ones, because usually you need to expose that material. But some diseases can transfer from the soil to the other ones. If you want to be on the 100% safe side, I'd say clear out all the dead debris and compost it. For at least, you know, 6 months to a year, especially if it's a hot compost, you can do it the 6 months or less. But if you really wanted to do the 100% guarantee, then, like I said, I'd take that off. Or if you're willing to kind of hedge your bets a little bit, you could bury it.
Okay, so it's if you want to risk it, just go for it, huh?
Yeah, right. If you want to risk it. But, you know, it wouldn't hurt if you've got a place that where you can, you know, set it aside for 6 months or a year. Why not?
I do, yep. I'm out in the country, so that's what I'll do. Thank you for your advice.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We had kind of along the lines of that. Well, actually not at all along the lines of that. Diane in Madison has heard conflicting advice about black walnut tree leaves in compost. So it is kind of along the lines. She says some people have told her to keep them out, and others say it doesn't matter once they compost.
Mm.
I wouldn't be me. I wouldn't do it.
Right. We haven't seen a lot of the research that shows either way. But like you said, Larry, I wouldn't want to be the experiment in my yard either. And the leaves don't necessarily have the most amount of the juglone toxicity in them. It's more so anything growing near its roots. But I just wouldn't risk using the black walnut leaves. You know, some trees just have different levels of concentrations of their chemicals in them anyways. And who knows what's in yours versus somebody else's. And, you know, I do kind of run along the advice line of, hey, if it's working for you, go ahead and do it. She doesn't know if that's going to work for her particular garden. And there are vegetable plants that are more sensitive to the juglone toxicity, and tomatoes do not do well with that. So I wouldn't want to experiment with composting those leaves and putting them around tomatoes, at least. You could probably use the leaves as mulch after they've been composted under plants that, like I said, are less sensitive to that toxicity. And we do have a list of those plants in one of our fact sheets that shows which ones tolerate being next to black walnuts more than others.
There we go. We had an email from Kate who wonders, if you have blossom end rot on squash or tomatoes, can you cut that out and then just go ahead and eat the fruit? And also, can you talk about when and how to harvest Brussels sprouts? I love Brussels sprouts.
So for the blossom end rot, it's not a disease issue. And we usually say with diseased vegetables that we're not, well, as Brian Huddleston says, technically, you know, research-based information would say don't eat it, but he does eat it. That's what you've said before. But with blossom end rot, like I said, it's not a disease issue. So you could cut that off and eat the portion that looks edible. And for the Brussels sprouts, they usually go quite late into the season before they're ready. And they're usually about the size of, what would you say?
Golf ball?
A golf ball, a little. That's a little big. That's a little big. Maybe a walnut size or so before they're ready. And you can harvest the bigger ones first, because some of them, at the ones further down in the stem, take a little longer to get big. But they can withstand temperatures in the 30s, even lower sometimes.
And kind of, if you can let them go that long, that's when they're the best too.
Right, they get a little sweeter.
Oh yeah, I would love to be sinking my teeth into some in about 45 minutes or so, but let's go to Bob in Elkhorn. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a question on composting. I have one of those black ball composters. It's about 5 feet in diameter, if you've ever seen them.
Yep.
I've put mostly grass clippings, paper shreddings, and sawdust into it, and I don't get real fine compost out of it. I get larger clumps about... Oh, maybe like a small teacup saucer would be about a half inch thick. I don't get the fine compost. Do I have to roll it more, or what's the way to get the finer compost?
You're doing grass clipping, sawdust, and what else?
Paper shredding for my shredder.
Okay. So the grass does tend to clump up like that and get closer together, and the sawdust, if it's as fine as I can visualize it, that's going to clump too. So I feel like you need something in there with a little bit more bulk in it, like leaves or even a couple sticks in there that you keep in there that as you turn it will help to break it up a little bit. I mean, the sticks, of course, you just take those out when you get your compost out of there. The other thing is watch your moisture content too, because that can maybe be adding to some of the clumping problems in there too.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Oh, I just went back to our Facebook page and refreshed it. And under our visitor posts, Kate Mayer sent a photo of some white peppers and says, could the white pepper be a white ghost pepper? So there is a white pepper called the white ghost pepper.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, it sure looks like...
Yeah, and see, I don't do really hot peppers, so I'm not a pepper connoisseur. I'm kind of fragile with the hot peppers there, but so that could be.
That could be it. So at least it's worth a look, white ghost pepper. So back to Annie who sent the original picture. Go look online. And you know, sometimes you think you've got one plant variety, and you know there was a little mix-up somewhere along the line, and you're winding up with a variety you didn't know you had.
A very hot variety, I think. Isn't that a hot variety?
Might be a little warm. But thanks a lot for sending that photo, Kate. I really appreciate it. Tamara sent something on Facebook. My tomatoes this year were grown in pots. They came up beautifully, turned red, stayed hard. The inside looked like it didn't ripen, and the tomatoes are really hard. I haven't seen this. Any ideas what went wrong?
I haven't ever seen them get that hard either, but the first thing I'm thinking of is pollination and variety.
Yeah, that's what came to my mind too, especially variety.
Yeah. I mean, I have heard of instances where people had really hard tomatoes on the inside, and I wonder what she means by very hard. Can you cut through it, or is it just that it's more of like a paste tomato where they don't have much water content in the inside and they're just kind of more dense?
I'm betting it was that. She may send us another note and add to it. In the meantime, we don't know for sure. Let's go to Donna in Westfield. Hi, Donna.
Yes, I have a question about my garden spot. I haven't had a garden in this spot for about 6 years, and I'm wondering how I get that ready for next spring.
What's there right now?
Weeds.
Okay. Yeah, I would be pulling out any of the weeds that you can right now, because you don't want those weed seeds to be there in the spring and ready to come up right away. You probably will have weed seeds in there, but if you can get some of that debris off right now. The other thing you might want to do is get a soil sample done just to check if you have to do any amendments to that, because you could do that this fall and put that in there and get it ready so that's ready for spring, or just be ready with your material when it's spring to have that. So
that's a good idea.
Yeah. So any amendments you could do in the fall, get the weeds off, and just kind of get your palette, so to speak, ready for your creation, your garden creation in the spring.
I like how you put that. That's
okay.
A great idea. And this time of the year for soil testing is, they're not as busy this time of the year, I don't
Correct.
Think.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
So
okay.
it's kind of easier to get it done. Thanks, Donna. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Erin LaFave, our guest today, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Eau Claire County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. We're talking with Erin LaFave, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Eau Claire County. And lots of callers online, lots of emails. Let's go to Norman in Wausau next. Norman, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Erin and Larry. Maybe you can help me out with this. We've tried to grow Meyer lemons in pots for some time. In the spring, I bought two more lovely-looking plants about 18 inches high with no blossoms or fruit on them. And I left them in the original pot they came in from the nursery, which they said you could do for a time. And other than having blossoms on them and the leaves look good color, I haven't had any vegetative growth. And my concern is sometimes when you just get blossoms, that means the plant is under stress and it's going to die, although it doesn't give any indication on any of them. What can I do to get vegetative growth?
So now you've got these obviously in a pot.
Right.
All right. Erin, what do you think? I've got some thoughts on it, but because I've got my lime tree, that has been very successful. Limey's producing a bunch of limes as we speak.
And I wonder, Larry, if yours is not a full-size tree, rather, I think these Meyer lemons that you buy, I think they're on some sort of dwarfing rootstock.
Right, and my limey is only, a few feet high, to be perfectly honest, but cranks out limes like you wouldn't believe. And it's a Bears lime. I've had good luck with the Bears lime, so I don't know if Bears makes a lemon. Erin, do you know if does Bears, and that's B-A-R-S-S. I'm not sure if they make a lemon, but I bet they do.
Clip off those blossoms so that the tree can actually put more of its energy to the rest of the tree rather than making blossoms. And then typically nitrogen will help to increase the vegetative growth on it too.
And what form of nitrogen should I use?
I use a fish oil.
Hmm. Okay.
But I don't know. What do you think, Erin?
Well, with a lime tree like that, a lemon tree like that, I might just use something that would be standard for a container plant. Anything that you could find in the stores for like a container plant for that lemon tree.
Yeah, nitrogen in the fish oil isn't real high.
Mm-hmm. No. How often do you put it on, Larry?
Oh, probably every other week I'll put a little on.
Okay.
I just, I mix it in with some water, like a teaspoon or something. Not a lot.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And if you don't have any luck with it, you might look, and I don't own any stock in Bears, but my Bears lime tree has been a very good tree. And I don't know how many limes it's got on it now, and different sizes. A couple, I think the squirrels came along and knocked off one. A couple of them the other day, but even those little ones, I've got some that are, I don't know. The big ones get to be just as big as a lime that you're going to buy in the grocery store. But the little ones, I've even put those in, if I'm making a smoothie or something, I'll just throw the whole lime in, rind and all, and it adds a nice little zing to the smoothie. So there you go. Aaron, are you a lemon or a lime grower?
I don't have one. I have a master gardener volunteer who has a lemon tree that, like you said, it just grows lemons like crazy. It's in a nice, warm window all winter long, and it produces very well. And it's bigger. It's a tree that's probably 2.5 feet tall and spreads about, you know, another 2 feet wide. So it has a lot of vegetative growth on it too.
Yeah. Well, actually, mine's probably about 2 feet. Mine's probably about 2 feet as well. And it sits in my bedroom, where second floor bedroom with a south-facing big window. So it gets great sun, even in the pretty good sun, let's put it that way, even in the winter time. And then in the summer, of course, it goes right out on the patio and sits. But it smells great when it's in the house. I can tell you that for free. Linda in Iron Belt, it's your turn. Hi, Linda. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, okay, I had coneflowers, purple coneflowers, planted out front. And this year, okay, I've had them for 3 years. They're gorgeous. This year, nothing but yellow, and they look like black-eyed Susans. I don't remember planting the black-eyed Susans. Can coneflowers change color, or did I plant something and they just overtook the coneflowers? And coneflowers are pretty hardy, you know.
They didn't have any powdery mildew or anything?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Yeah, because oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the disease that affects a purple coneflower. It'll come back to me. But it can make them look kind of yellow, but they look really misshapen too.
No,
aster yellows.
They just look like black-eyed Susans.
Yeah, well, that could be aster yellows.
Yeah, usually the middle of those gets kind of like a light green to light yellow, and it gets really big. The middle part gets really big. And perhaps some bird decided to drop a few of those flowers for you or something.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Linda, for calling. Take a photo. You always get a photo of this and send it in. And, you know, we've got people who will take a look at it. And, in fact, if you've got, you may have a photo. If you do, put it up on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and we'll see if we can identify it for you. Thanks for calling. Danny in Boscobel, thanks for calling. Hi.
Well, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
My gladiolas grew throughout the season pretty well. The stalks were, and the foliage was green, and then the buds, the shoots came up where the blossoms come from, and they all turned brown and died.
Mm. Oh.
Now, I don't know if I have a fungal problem or insect problem. I went to the, when I noticed that them starting to turn brown, I put some vile garden dust on them. It didn't seem to have any effect whatsoever. Out of about 100, at least 100 bulbs, I probably got 3 or 4 blooms, and the blooms are mottled with white spots as well.
Hmm. Yeah, that does sound like some sort of disease or insect problem when they turn brown like that. I mean, typically you see it as a disease problem, but there are some insects that can get in there and do that too. But when did you plant these?
I'm sorry?
Have they been in the ground for several years, or they were just planted?
No, the gladiola, I put them in. I used part of my old bulbs, and I bought some new bulbs, and I put them in early June.
Mm. Okay. Hmm.
Yeah, there are some viruses that can get on gladiolus, too. I was trying to think of a corrective action for you on this one. That might be a Brian Huddleston discussion.
Yeah,
that we could get back.
My mother used to dig up her bulbs and disinfect them with a Lysol solution before she stored them.
Mm. Yeah, that's not something extension would suggest necessarily. Mm-hmm. That's I don't have any fact sheet that would suggest that. And I'm not really sure do you know exactly how she did it, too? Because I would hate for you to do it and then have too much of the solution on
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Right. I don't recall.
Yeah, she would have probably had a diluted solution, would be my guess.
Is there any problems with the leaves at all? Or are they just really nice and green?
No, they're mottled with brown spots.
Yeah, that's a virus. That kind of sounds like a virus problem.
Yeah, it does. If you've got a photo, again, that's one that Brian could almost, I think if he had a good photo of the leaves, he could at least give an educated guess as to what it is. And by this time, I imagine everything is pretty bad shape. But if you had some that's sort of still recognizable and not completely gone, you could send them in to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic and let him take a look. And if he can't figure it out, he might pass it along to somebody else over here at the University of Wisconsin. At least it's, I mean, you know, there's a lot of bulbs, and that's a lot of work to put those in and everything, and then you wind up with that result. That's not a happy result.
Right, and it sounds like they kind of transmitted it to each other, because usually
yeah.
one or two is kind of anomaly, but to have them all doing that, that's
yeah.
something's moved it around, and either it was from being together, the bulbs touching each other, or sometimes like aphids move around these viruses.
Erin LaFave, our guest today. Erin is the horticulture educator for Eau Claire County, UW Extension educator. Always great to have her with us for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Gardening is a lot of fun to do, and it's a lot of fun to talk about it, especially when you've got a guest expert like Erin LaFave. Erin LaFave is the horticulture educator for UW Extension for Eau Claire County. And with me today, I'm Larry Mueller. So happy to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. Questions, join in at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly lots of people online already with questions. So, Erin, I think we'll just go right straight to the phones. Donna in Green Bay, thank you for calling.
I'm wondering, I had a bad case of early tomato blight this year, and I'm wondering if I have to do something special with my tomato cages before I put them away. Would they spread on the cages?
If there was plant debris that was kind of left on the cages, you know how sometimes those
yeah.
leaves kind of wrap around there, then it could overwinter on there, so you could certainly disinfect those cages in some way. But have you moved your planting to a different part
yes.
of the garden?
Yeah,
okay.
I moved it, like, it was a 3-year rotation last year, and
yeah.
and I got the tomato blight. And I only have one area now without that haven't had tomatoes in ever, and I just don't want... I'm wondering if it could overwinter on the cages themselves if it's not plant debris.
Yeah.
Well, if the... Could the spores live on the just the metal part or the plastic part? That I'm not real sure of. But, you know, it doesn't take much plant debris for them to live on sometimes if we can't really see it. But it's just so difficult to get that blight to get under control, because it really is just seems to be
yeah.
everywhere.
And probably on the legs. If the legs have some dirt, would it transfer on that dirt?
I'd clean him off really good.
Yeah.
What kind of solution are you thinking of? A bleach solution or?
Well, are these metal?
Yeah.
Yeah. You could do a weak bleach solution, or even some of those disinfectant sprays that are in a can. You could do that too.
Oh, okay. The
yeah, that would work.
Spray would do it, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Okay.
Good luck.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Pat or Donna, for calling. Pat in Luxembourg is next. Pat, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like you to go into a little more detail in response to the woman who called a little bit ago about preparing her garden for the spring. It's been filled with weeds for a while now, and I have a similar situation. And I've pulled all of the weeds, but there are, you know, tens if not hundreds of thousands of weed seeds there in the garden bed now. What's my best strategy for if I want a garden next year? I've been told about a product called Preen. that prevents seed germination, but how would that then affect anything I might want to plant next spring?
Well, it certainly would say on the container when you should be able to plant after that application. And usually people use preen. Typically they'll do the preen after everything has been planted and has sprouted already, because it only affects things that are trying to sprout. Here's a couple other ideas to get those, to choke out some of those weeds for the spring. You could put some black plastic down. Usually that only works when it's really hot and the sun is baking on it. You could do cardboard right now. Put a nice thick layer of cardboard down and something to hold it down. And then that way it'll smother anything from growing in the spring. So when you're ready, when the soil is ready to be worked up in the spring, that cardboard has really helped keep some of those things down. There are different kinds of cover crops that might be an option for you too, where you actually plant a crop in there, and there's different things that you can do. And it grows, it will start growing now, and then it smothers out any weeds that are growing in the spring, and you just till it in as a green manure is what they call it. But you want to make sure that whatever you plant doesn't flower and then go to seed, because then you'll just have a different kind of weed problem in there.
Okay. And could you recommend what some of those cover crops would be?
Winter wheat would be one, probably. Winter rye would be another one.
Right. Yep. And we do have a good fact sheet on that, too, about growing growing these kinds of things in there, too. And it'll tell you, how much you need to put down and when the appropriate time would be. The trick is just to find a local source of one of these cover crops to put on there. So you might want to check that fact sheet over and just see what's locally available for you. And, of course, you could buy anything off the Internet. But
yeah, local farm co-op would be.
Okay, so the cover crops would go in now and then would be tilled in the spring?
Some of them. Some of them go in now. Some of them can be done a little in the spring, too. But the winter rye, you can put in now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. An email from Cindy in New Berlin. She has tomatoes still blooming. Wonders if she should pinch the blossoms to encourage ripening of the developed tomatoes.
I'm not sure that would affect the ripening tomatoes. It certainly would allow different, the nutrients from going into more the flower from developing. But those flowers are probably going to start aborting anyway, because it is just, temperatures are getting cooler and cooler at nights, and tomatoes don't like that. So I don't know necessarily that would help anything ripen at this point.
Yeah.
But, it's worth a try.
If you want to try it, experiment. Try it on one plant, not on another, and see what happens. We have Cecil in Lancaster with a question. Hi, thanks for calling.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate taking the call. I enjoy your show. My question is regarding jade plants. I like to raise those. I have regular ones and variegated leaf. I have one that's probably 4 foot tall and at least 3 foot in diameter. It does blossom almost every year, and I was wondering if I should trim it, and if so, where to start and how severe.
Wow. That's a jade plant, you said?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. I think that you sound like the expert on jade plants at this point. And are you looking to prune it just because it's getting so tall, or is there a reason why you want to prune it?
Well, I've certainly looked online a few times, and I've talked with other folks. Some say that you should trim any limb or branch that's hanging down instead of going up. And I don't know. To me, if the plant looks healthy and the leaves are nice and plump, I have a real issue with cutting its little arms off.
Yeah.
Right, that's kind of what I would think, too. If you felt like it was just getting too big, then I would consider pruning it. Or if you felt like it just looked like it had kind of it was getting weaker in some areas, and because, sometimes when those plants get really crowded in the pots, parts of them just start not looking well, and so you just want to selectively get them out of there. But I don't know, Larry, any ideas on pruning jade plants?
I just leave it alone.
Yeah.
I wouldn't touch it.
like I said, if there's something that just doesn't agree, the shape of the plant isn't looking right, then maybe I would take it off. And, you know, jade plants, typically, they're not real fussy, so you can just take it down to a growing point where it would be, or even all the way down to the base of the plant if needed, because some of those, I know, jade plants will have branches at times, or sometimes they only come out of the soil there. So.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. Then thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And an email question from Judy. 3 weeks ago, a neighbor removed an actively growing milkweed plant along with unopened pods from her garden. I quickly dug a large hole, placed the milkweed plant in my garden, and watered twice a day ever since. Green seed pods still hang on the main plant. What should I do for this plant to better survive over the winter?
Well, like I had said before, I would leave all the green leaves alone as much as you can. And then as soon as everything really turns yellow or brown and dies back, then I'd prune it out, because it's going to grow straight from the ground again next year. The milkweed doesn't, it's not like a perennial plant where it comes out and just turns green again. You have to, like I said, it comes right from the ground and creates a whole new system every year.
Yep. And good for you. And kept it alive. That's a good job of gardening there. Thanks, Judy. Marge in Wauwatosa, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, you're quite welcome. I have a garden on the Milwaukee County grounds in Wauwatosa, and it's a perennial garden, so I get to keep it every year. Mm-hmm. However, I have a problem with field bindweed, which in just one section of the garden, and I try to garden organically, and I cannot seem to eradicate it just by pulling it. Is there something I can do that would get rid of this monster?
And can you even use chemicals in that landscape there?
Well, yeah, we can. I'm not sure I want to, though.
Right, yeah. Well, you could do some mulching in that area where it is. You know, even maybe, like I said before, some cardboard to put down, and then leaves or something on top to hold it down, just to kind of smother it. It is aggressive stuff, so
absolutely.
Maybe you're...
It's coming up in my beds. I have permanent raised beds.
Yeah.
So I can put cardboard and mulch down in the pathways where it's also coming up. But, it comes up in my potato patch and where my rhubarb is. And
and sometimes the goal is to not eradicate it, but just to keep it back out of where we want to be. I know that's not the answer we always want to hear, but sometimes that's the only goal you can do. And if people aren't doing it around you as well, then it's just really a battle.
I know, it's the birds.
Yeah, it's aggressive stuff.
Yep.
So if I pour vinegar on it, that's not going to work, or?
Well, that creates its own problems.
Right, yep. Okay, I mean, that you can think of that as a pesticide, too, that you're using. I mean, we still have to be careful of how we use it, and it can burn plants. And we, at Extension, we don't have any recommendations at this point of how to use vinegar and what solution and how to dilute it and stuff. We don't have any of those recommendations, so.
Okay.
All right. I wish we had better news for you, Marge.
Yeah, and sometimes these weeds just don't have a one-stop shop of how to get it out, unfortunately, and we just kind of have to learn to manage them rather than eradicate them.
Yeah. Joyce in Rhinelander has a question. Joyce, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Yes, you're welcome. I was wondering, I had a tomato plant this year that I had purchased at a plant place, and the tomatoes on it looked beautiful and ripe. That's from the top, and I would pick it, and underneath it had a hard core in it, black, and that was like half of the tomato. And then when you cut the top one-third off, it was nice, but underneath it was hard black. I was wondering what would cause that. Every tomato was like that on the plant.
Sounds like blossom end rot almost.
Yeah. Did you grow it in a pot?
any large container that was made especially for three plants, like three tomatoes or that we had purchased, and you put a certain amount of soil and fertilizer in it.
Yeah. Yep.
And then you kept water in it all the time. Well, the other plants in last year and this year did fine, except this one plant.
Yeah, it does sound like blossom end rot, and it gets really black on the very bottom of the tomato.
Yeah.
And so that's just, it's not a disease, it's just a physiological problem, meaning that the calcium in the plant is having a hard time getting to the fruit for whatever reason. There could be a lot of calcium in the soil, and it's just not getting to that fruit when it's developing. And typically, it's a result of fluctuations in temperature and moisture. So from, like, bone-dry conditions to really moist conditions. And those extremes kind of stress the plant out. And like I said, that calcium is, it's tricky to get into that fruit somehow.
Well,
so
Kirby, I was told 10-5-10 was good for tomatoes.
For fertilizer.
Is that
was
good?
Was this an earth box that you got?
Yes.
Yep, and then it came with the tomato fertilizer?
I think it did in the beginning, and then from then on you were supposed to put your own in.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because usually there's, typically there's enough to go in there, but the fertilizer, no, extra fertilizer wouldn't necessarily solve this problem.
No, it's more, typically it's moisture, right?
Moisture, or if you're, like I said, if it gets really cool at night and then suddenly really hot, that fluctuation in temperature.
Well, that's what our temperature was this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, of course, the pots are on my dock on the lake because they get more sun and the animals can't get them as easily. Probably the wind, but why wouldn't it affect the other plants? Why would this one be...
Yeah, never.
What were the other plants tomatoes as well?
I had other plants, a different type of tomato plants in it.
Oh, it's the different types.
And yes. They were fine, but this one was just messed up.
Yeah, those other varieties, those other types of tomatoes maybe just responded better to that stress than this one did.
Yeah, it's especially since different varieties. If they were all the same, that would be, But that's a variety that... You may have had a variety there that just is not capable of, under those circumstances, taking up the calcium.
And typically my recommendation for tomatoes in earth boxes is just one tomato plant per earth box.
Even if they say more.
Right, because those, I mean, tomatoes usually do very well in an earth box, and they get very, very big typically, and so there's just too much competition in there for all of them, but, you know, there's just so much space for so many plants in there.
I've mentioned this before on the show, but I, you know, with my straw bale gardens, I have never had blossom end rot in any of those straw bale gardens, which I'm very happy for, to be perfectly honest. It's nice to be able to not have that issue. And I don't know if it's just luck or I'm doing it right.
Well, typically with those straw gardens, they're getting... you know, the temperature is probably a little bit more consistent and the moisture is a little bit more consistent just because it's kind of that, you know, sponge insulated effect in there.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's been a great few years, that's for sure for me. Kathy in Lancaster, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about weeds in the garden that's a little bit different.
Okay.
We would like to return the garden to grass, and then it's a large garden. And it's full of weed seeds. Can we, like, burn those with, like, a torch or something? I've heard about doing that.
Yeah. People have done that, torched the weeds to get them out of there. And so you're converting it back to turf, essentially.
Right. And we need to get that planted in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, usually for new lawns, we say that the mid-August to mid-September is prime time. And then
you're right at the edge of
You're on the edge. Just means you're going to maybe have a different success rate with some of the seeds germinating. And like I said, it looks like our first frost isn't happening in this area anyways for a little while, so that might be okay. But if you are interested in using an herbicide that could work too, and then just look at the label to see when you can seed, how long after that you can seed in there. But some people do use the torch method.
Have you, how big an area is it? Like 10 by 20 or?
Oh, no. Boy, I'm not good at.
Bigger than 10 by 20?
Yes.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Maybe 20 by 30.
Okay.
Yeah.
The only reason I brought that up is I was thinking sod.
Yeah, that's probably not. That would be great, but that's probably not in the budget.
You should check. I would still check the price of sod. Look at the price of sod.
Okay.
I mean, you might just decide that, you know what, we can have this lawn down in a couple of hours, and it's going to look wonderful. Anyway, at least look at the price, because I think for some people discover that, you know, it's not as expensive as I thought it was going to be.
Mm. Very good.
All right, worth a try, or worth a thought anyway, worth looking into. And if it's, you know, if it's too expensive, well, it's too expensive, and then put the grass in. Now, Aaron, you're probably rolling your eyes and saying, oh, my God, what's he doing suggesting sod? But
oh, no, that's a good option as well. And like you said, it's just a price point at this point to see if you can get it in or not.
Yeah, and I brought this up a few weeks ago when we were talking about lawns. My couple of neighbors, one had a couple of and areas about the same size, and one seeded and one just brought in some sod. And I'm telling you, the area that was sodded is so much nicer. And they were with far fewer problems than the other area almost right next to it. It was amazing to watch. Doug in La Crosse, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yes, Larry. living over in La Crosse on Mississippi here, I do a lot of fishing, and so I have been, for a number of years, I've been composting my fish remains into my garden, and I was just wondering if I'm doing any harm or if I need to do something to maybe help it by how deep would I compost them in to get maximum benefit, or mm-hmm. if it's a good practice or not a good practice.
Yeah.
Well, the only issue in... So it doesn't sound like you have it, is the smell is one, and then attracting rodents and things to come in there. So that would determine how deep you wanted to put it. But I don't see, other than those two things, I don't see any issues of putting that in there.
And about the only thing that it might do is, as it decomposes, it may be tying up some nitrogen for a while.
Okay.
Aaron, is that correct? I'm
not sure about that. I know that... like bark and stuff will do that if it's fresh.
Okay.
Bark and wood chips and things
may
like
not
that.
Be the case for a fish, but well, what that was what our I think our pilgrims were taught by the natives way back when to put fish in with the planting of corn.
Right. Well, I do it in the fall, and then I let it winter over.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And so I don't have any problems with the smell or rodents. And then it gets the winter snow that melts into it and help decompose it even more.
Perfect. And thanks, Doug, for that comment. That's a great way to do it. And Aaron, we are out of time. Thank you so much. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Oh, I sure will.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. Aaron LaFave is the horticulture educator for UW Extension for Eau Claire County. And she'll be back again. We had a great time talking with her. I did. I hope you did, too. I bet you did. She'll be back. Remember, we'll talk next time about dividing your bulbs and peonies. And on Monday, we'll deal with aches and pains. Stay with us here on the Ideas Net.